We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, 6 straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 551. We got the whole crew here, myself, Scott, and Bob. They're playing damn good baseball, these Yankees. They're pitching their freaking asses off, which I feel like is bizarro world for this team after the past 4 years of just wondering when the starting pitching is going to come into form. But it has been on another level. They're on a historic pitching run, Scott, and they completed the sweep today, which is not something that they had been doing, but they completed the sweep against a good team. Like, the White Sox are a good team. We talked about it in our Friday Fives. Like, White Sox are a legit team. That's a big boy sweep.
That is a big boy sweep. That's a good way to put it. They not only are they a good team, they're the, as we talked about on Friday, the best offense when you look at run differential. So this was, you know, the way that they came in and frankly dominated this lineup, besides, you know, a Wandy Peralta little miscue that today, this pitching staff dominated what is a very, very potent offense. So this was an impressive weekend. And to close it out like they did today, it seemed like they were up. Chicago kept chasing them, kept coming back, finally tied it. But then they were able to close it out. So look, good confirmation, I think, to close it out. Yes, it feels good to close it out. If they had lost today, I still think this weekend's a success. You know, you take two of three from this team, but of course you want to close it out and on a high note. And they did that. And the pitching staff, phenomenal. I guess they just had to hit the reset button last year. Hit the reset button, get rid of a couple people. No more going in, understanding exactly what you're going to expect the next year. And let's just throw caution in the wind and see what happens. It's working.
You say even if they lost on Sunday, it would have still been a successful series. I guess it depends on how they would have lost. Chapman blew the save. You knew it was going to happen eventually. He's not going to go the whole season without allowing any runs.
No more June 15th. That was an aggressive date.
So I'm glad that his the time he got snake bit, the time he gave up a home run, it didn't come back to cost the Yankees a game. But had they lost in that way, maybe we'd think a little differently than if they just went out and got beat today. But yeah, they completed the sweep despite the fact that Chapman and the bullpen blew a save. And Taillon, he was much better than he was his last couple times out, 5 innings, no runs. But when you compare him to the absolute dominating performances that these Yankee starters have been on, like I'm going to run through some of these numbers. They're just silly. So one turn through the rotation, starting with Corey Kluber's no hitter, 5 starts, 35 innings, no runs allowed. They had 4 consecutive starts of 7+ innings and no runs allowed. That had not happened since 1932. So it's not just new baseball when they're not allowing pitchers to go deep in games. Like, this shit hasn't happened since 1932. Babe Ruth was playing in baseball when this happened with the Yankees last. I don't want to understate how good of a pitching stretch this is. Do you remember in the 2005 playoffs when the White Sox, I believe, had 4 consecutive complete games in the playoffs? And I was just like, I couldn't wrap my head around that. Like, I feel like that's what we're watching with the Yankee starters right now, just because of how they have not been pitching well prior to this season. I feel like I can't wrap my head around, 7+ innings and no run? You're saying 7 innings, not 4 1/3?
No, it's wild. It's a very, very drastic difference from what we're used to. And that's what's so much fun, man. It's like, none of this was expected. When you have success, when you're just very lukewarm about what's going to happen, or not even lukewarm, but just, you just don't know. There were so many unexpected things because of injury or, you know, older guys coming in or just people we haven't seen before, unknowns, that you don't have expectations for them to, you know, all overly succeed. And that's what's happening. Anytime you exceed expectations, it's fun. It's fun to watch. And what this team is doing, specifically these starting pitchers, it's damn good, man. And Taillon saw what was going on. He's like, I got to join this parade. I got to get in on this stat. I got to make history with the boys. And he did. Good for him. I'm glad they pulled him, to be honest. He only had 80 pitches. I just looked at the box score, 80 pitches through 5. But you know what it does today? Like, this to me is one of those opportunities. Granted, you know, Peralta came in and immediately gave up a 2-run shot. But that said, when you pull Taillon after 5-1, you're letting him finish this game with success, right? Because what's been beating him in the past are these snake bit home runs. He gets snake bit and it just erases the start, essentially. Two home runs, one home run here and there. And I guess Boone just didn't want that to happen, wanted him to walk out on a high note. And I appreciate that. And the reason he's able to do that is because the other guys are doing their job. We talked about this on Friday. The other guys doing their job allows people, specifically Boone and Marty Blake, if he's doing anything, who knows, Gerrit Cole, to be patient with these guys that are trying to get to that next level. And you got to love that. You absolutely got to love that, because it's good for their development, I think.
Yeah. I mean, well, what 4 starts of 7+ innings allows you to do is not push Taillon this afternoon. It's that he's okay, 5 good innings. We can get 4 innings out of our bullpen because we haven't had to do that
for a
long time. So
they have the luxury to allow him to end on a high note. What's the point in him going out for one more inning at that point? There's no point.
It's really the only downside, because another time through the order,
he hadn't given up anything. So all he could do is leave one over the plate against a dangerous team who's going to see him another time. And they're, you know, That is how a manager supports their player. It's a good example of allowing that guy to build onto a start,
putting
some
players
momentum
in the right position to succeed. Yeah, that's what the manager's number one job is to do, is put your people in the best situations to succeed.
Now, Peralta, as a lefty coming in against this team that destroys lefties, that's one I'm not understanding as much, but c'est la vie, they won the game.
So this is where you have a situation where the pecking order is clearly, obviously, after Aroldis Chapman. It's Loaisiga, Chad Green, or Chad Green, Loaisiga. So, but now, because they had to get 4 innings out of their bullpen, okay, who's next? They got lefties there. So what other choice did he have? Try and get two out of Loaisiga? So. He could have tried to get two out of Loaisiga or
Or two out of Green.
Which is, I wouldn't be totally against. Monday's an off day, but that's what he's left with in that situation until you get Zach Britton back and until you get Darren O'Day back. So there's just a lot of lefties in the bullpen. We're kind of not used to seeing that.
That's true. That is true. We don't see lefties very often. There's usually only one.
And before today, it was the whole pitching staff that had just been lights out. They had allowed just one run total in their prior four games. That also had not happened since 1932 and 2002. And I'm almost afraid to ask, Bob, how old were you in 2002?
Zero.
Wasn't,
I was born in 2002, August. So when I don't know the specific date. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this is literally the best pit, like Yankees pitching staff, like performance lately. Like I've never seen this in my lifetime.
I mean, that's apparently we have seen it in 2002, but I certainly didn't remember it. I mean, I remember the early 2000s Yankees teams having elite starting pitching. Roger Clemens, Andy Pettit, Mike Messina, David Wells. Like it was elite starting pitching, but that seems like ages ago that happened. So this obviously has happened in both of our lifetimes, Scott, but it's rare. You were drunk. I was 2002. I was 14. And Bob might not have been born when it happened, depending on when it happened in the season. So you've only seen one championship, Bob, and you were super young for that championship.
Yeah. I just missed the three-peat a couple of years off.
Do you go, so whenever I want to get nostalgic with the Yankees, which is more than I care to admit, I'll just, you know, throw on a couple highlights of the 90s teams. Do you really have any connection to those teams? Do you ever watch those highlights?
Not really the 90s. I mean, I like to watch like a young Jeter, a young Mariano Rivera. I love watching those highlights, but my go-to team is the 2009 team. When I go to watch highlights and I want to like get excited about Yankees baseball, I go watch vintage Jeter highlights that I grew up watching.
See, vintage really Jeter and your vintage Jeter 2009 is so much different than my vintage Jeter, which is 1999. Exactly. 1999, Derek Jeter was the best he ever was, but
he still had hair.
He had hair in 09, didn't he? Yeah, a little bit of hair.
It just kept going. I mean, it was creeping. It was creeping. You know, that's when you go bald and you're like, you just shave it and go bald. You bick it and you're good. Yeah. Nobody knows.
My haircuts when I was younger, I would always get a buzz cut. I would get a number two buzz cut and I would only remember it because Jeter is basically bald. And I would get...
And he's number two.
I would look basically bald because my hair is super thin all around. That's how I remembered it.
Give me the Derek Jeter. Just barely, exactly. Barely over bick my head. So the Yankees starting pitching this season now ranks second behind only the Dodgers, who have an unbelievable starting pitching staff. Second behind the Dodgers in WAR. And if you look at where they're individually ranked, Gerrit Cole, number one in baseball with a 2.8 WAR over Jacob deGrom and Corbin Burns, who both have 2.2. Cole on Saturday, we kind of joked, Scott, that an angry Gerrit Cole is going to be bad news for the other team because he was coming off a rough start. He didn't give up any runs, but he was by no means vintage Gerrit Cole, lights out, shut down, don't allow anything. Gerrit Cole, he walked three guys. Like that's unheard of for Gerrit Cole.
Yeah. I think the before he lost a game, he was on some ridiculous streak, 52 strikeouts or something ridiculous before his last walk. So the guy wasn't walking anybody. He hadn't walked anybody in a ridiculous amount of time. So the fact that he's coming, this is exactly why he's such a goddamn professional. He comes in there, walks three guys against, again, one of the more potent offenses in baseball, still doesn't give up anything. Yes, the Yankees turned some clutch double plays, but those ground balls got to be there for you to turn a double play. So, you know, he's getting the ground ball when he needed it, which to his point, he's a strikeout pitcher. You know, occasionally he'll get bit as well by a long fly ball. But to get those ground balls when he needed them as well, that's something that is very, very impressive when you're not at your best and when he's not at his best and still able to win, even though he walked three against the White Sox. I love that. I absolutely love that.
They turned three double plays behind him, four on the day. And I believe two of the double plays came the batter following the walk. So he walked and then he got a double play immediately. It's like, oh, just kidding. Didn't really happen. Yankees defense overall is looking better too. I'm not going to call them an elite defensive team. Because they're not. They're just not. But they're not booting the ball around like freaking little leaguers anymore. And that's good.
So if we're looking at what was going on in April, because really all of this really shitty baseball that we watched was contained in April. All of it. As soon as May, well, as soon as the clock struck, well, they started playing well.
Didn't the rock bottom moment in Baltimore happen in May?
If it was, it was early May, May 1st, 2nd. But I don't, yeah. Wasn't, I thought it was April. Either okay. way, April was the dog shit month. All of a sudden, May starts coming out. May flowers, they start blooming. This team starts actually, you know, playing baseball the way that they are. You're right. They're not booting the ball. Glaber's playing significantly better. I think when you have a guy up the middle, especially at shortstop, who's playing better, has more confidence, then you, the defense just looks completely better on the infield. Urshela has never been an issue. Second base has never been an issue. First base was an issue, but then LeMay, he went over there, solidified it. Mike Ford's been good. And really the linchpin there is Gleyber Torres as shortstop. You know, he's able to be out there. The bat's working now. He's hitting the ball well, squaring it up. Not just hitting home runs either. This guy's squaring it up, you know, hitting. I was hoping the evolution of Gleyber Torres was going to be this, was where he first started. Actually, he was hitting the ball kind of all over the park. He's got the ability to do that. So I'm glad we're starting to see it. But he's a big deal when the defense is rolling. You got to have a good shortstop.
He's 11 for his last 18 with a double, a homer, and 8 runs batted in. And that's since being called back from the COVID list. And since he got called out and criticized for not hustling down the first baseline on April 22nd, or I believe that was, it happened maybe April 20th or April 21st or something. Then they went to Cleveland. So I still say Cleveland is the turnaround. I know you say Baltimore, but like everything goes back to like April 22nd in that Cleveland series. But since then, he's hitting .329 with 6 extra base hits, 17 RBIs, and an 850 OPS. So he's been much better. And like you said, 2018, I remember him hitting a ton of balls to right field, staying right center to right center. And he had power to center and right center in 2018. And then, I don't know, maybe 2019, he hit all those home runs. He got pull happy. I've been seeing a more quiet hitter, meaning like he's not like wiggling the bat around as much. And he's not like moving his feet as much. Like he still has a little bit of a leg kick, but it just seems quieter and he's making more contact. So I don't know if that's a conscious mechanical change or if now he's just not trying to hit a home run into the left field bleachers every single time. But I'm watching him hit and he just looks calmer at the plate.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. I think when you look at the approach for Glaber as well, when you start going the other way and you start going with pitches, you're not looking to pull every single ball, right? And I think that alone just gives you more confidence because you can do more with different pitches. You have more plate coverage if you're trying to go the other way. You can be more patient. You don't have to think that you're going to just tug one to left every single time and hit it, you know, 350 feet. That's not the name of the game. The name of the game is to make good contact, barrel up the ball, and stay through the zone as long as possible. And when he's doing that and going the other way, good things happen. Very good things happen.
Do you know when Luke Voit gets like a 2-0 pitch or a 3-1 pitch? You know the Luke Voit, I'm going to try and hit it out of the stadium swing? Yeah. I feel like Glaber was taking way too many of those hacks at the plate.
He definitely was. I mean, there was a kick. It looked like he was, you know, all way back just trying to launch every time. And it just wasn't working at all. And we were screaming. I was pulling my hair out with these guys in April when they're going all or nothing. And all we need to do is just get it back to the basics. Get back to the basics of baseball. And thankfully they did. They really did. It looks like they've done that. They slowed shit down. KISS, keep it simple, stupid, and just do the basics. And that's what's happening.
So I said Gerrit Cole ranks first in Major League Baseball with WAR. Surprisingly on the staff, Jordan Montgomery ranks second. I don't think I would have guessed that. I think I probably would have guessed Corey Kluber or Domingo Herman. But Montgomery ranks second, 37th overall in Major League Baseball. Corey Kluber, 44th in Major League Baseball. Domingo Herman, 60th. And Jameson Taillon, 101st. So they just missed out on having all 5 of their starting pitchers, which I'm just going to knock on wood. Maybe the two of you should knock on wood too. They actually are almost through May, still with the same 5 starting pitchers. Like that can't also go unsaid, because that's huge for this team to not be dealing with injury after injury. Maybe I just jinxed it, or maybe if you don't believe in jinxes, then who cares? But they just barely miss having 5 starters in the top 100. That doesn't sound like that great top 100, but think about every team has 5 plus starting pitchers. There's a shit ton of pitchers.
Right. And there's a shit ton of pitchers. There's no, well, I mean, when you look at the top four, if we're counting Herman as number four and Tyone's five, just because of what they've done, then it makes sense. I mean, we just talked about his last six starts. I think Herman, you know, the only thing in there was a slight blemish to Houston.
Do you want to hear these numbers, Domingo Herman, since April 22nd? There we go again. Since April 22nd, he's made six starts, 37 and a third innings, 1.93 ERA, 2.80 FIP, 3.58 expected FIP. So the expected stats are a little bit higher than the actuals, but okay, you're telling me that the guy's going to pitch 37 innings over six games to around a 3 expected FIP? Cool. freaking cool with me.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. And just so you know, that Orioles series ended on April 29th. So yeah.
Oh, just under the wire. Okay.
Contained in April, man. I'm telling you, April was a voodoo month.
So what was it? What happened? Why? We talked about preparation and how the guys were not ready coming out of spring training. I think you poo-pooed that. But like, I think that's a legit thing.
I didn't poo-poo that. I said, no, I think that's, first of all, we've seen this multiple times over again for many Yankee teams. They're not sharp in the beginning of the year. Not many teams are, to be honest. But they were extra special, not sharp. And to just flip
extra
the switch.
Extra special bad this year.
To flip the switch and be able to, you know, turn it on. I mean, literally drastic difference. It's black and white when you're looking at April and May from these two teams. The pitching's been good, though. I mean, the starting pitching wasn't what it was in April, but the bullpen was nasty all through April. So they've always been able to rely on the bullpen and Garrett Cole to be able to carry them a bit.
The bullpen and Garrett Cole kept them afloat in April.
Yes.
Because
they were that bad offensively.
They were that bad defensively
and on the base path. Yes.
It was they were making every mistake you could possibly imagine to try and lose games in April. And the only reason they were around 500 at the end of the month is because of Garrett Cole and the bullpen.
Correct.
And then
the fact that they've made this switch, you know, turned it on and or whatnot. Look, when you're looking at what's happening in May, I'm seeing an offense that is just taking a much better approach. Bottom line, it seems like their approach and their strategy to score runs, to, you know, attack the individual at bat is just better. How many times have we seen long rallies this you know, the past couple of weeks of base hits and like they've actually been running the bases. It's been crazy. And then the coaching staff or the pitching staff, whoever made these decisions and however this happened, we're getting more depth. The starting pitchers are getting more depth. They're getting deeper into games. They've made a commitment almost to get these guys deeper into games and to take the load off of the bullpen. And it's working.
Do you remember when you mentioned the other day on the show, you wonder if there's analytics behind this decision that the Yankees are making? Like I tried to look into that because the Yankees, where they rank in starting pitch, like I'm going to pull that up right now. But because they have always ranked below like bottom 10 in the league in innings pitched as a starting staff for this, basically since mid 2010s, that's where they'd been. And this is like a big turnaround. So I'm going to pull up right now the Fangraphs.
I think the last time we looked it up, they were first in MLB.
So
they were top three, if not number one.
They are, as a starting pitching staff, they rank second. Nope. Sorry. They rank fifth in innings pitched with 250 and 2/3.
As a starting pitching staff?
Starting pitching staff, they are fifth in baseball in innings pitched. The Dodgers are one, Giants, Oakland,
what are
Philly,
the numbers? What are the like how far, how, what's the,
they're 13 innings behind the Dodgers.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we looked this up. I don't know if you, either way, they were up there. And no, when I saw that, it was baffling. I was like, I couldn't believe it. You know, you're watching it happen. You're seeing these guys get through. But when you see the culmination of that and their actual volume start ramping up towards the top of the league, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
They have no understanding what the philosophy of this team has been over the past, you know, 3-4 years plus.
They have not been up in the top five, never mind. They've not been in top half of the league, never mind top five in this stat. Like this stat, I think, is so important. So important to a regular season baseball team. We have not seen it. I'm so excited if this maintains how this team is going to look at the end of the, how this pitching staff as a whole is going to look at the end of the year versus how it's looked in the past few years when the bullpen has had to carry just a crazy amount. The bullpen, I think I had this stat a couple of weeks ago, since 2018 ranked third in Major League Baseball in innings pitched. The Rays were number one, but the Rays bullpen opens and every they half their rotation was openers. So that's why that was skewed. And I forget what other team. So the Yankees were third and now they're bottom in the league in bullpen. This is like the stat I'm most excited about this year with this Yankees team.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is when you look back, it's still the offense that's what's failed us in the playoffs. It's not the pitching staff.
But it's the bullpen has, you know, let me finish. I mean, if you want to take the 2019 ALCS, okay, the Yankees had to have Chad Green open an elimination game, and he had already pitched four times in that series. Hopefully, if the starting pitching doesn't get knocked out in the fourth inning or the fifth inning every single night, Chad Green's not fried by game six, and he's not opening a game. So you say it's the offense that failed them, but at the same time, the pitching failed them too. It just failed them in a different way.
No, I mean, you're right when you talk about the construction of it and the way that they've had to attack some of these games, or at least the way that they, I'm not going to say that they had to, they didn't have to start Davey Garcia, you know, for an inning and then bring in half. They didn't have to do that. They chose to do that. But in big moments, in big opportunities, when this Yankees team has to go up against, you know, good starting pitching, they've been shut down many times over and has been one of the significant reasons why they get bounced, because the pitching staff has, for whatever reason, pulled it together, strung enough, did enough with what they had to do, keep them in games. And the offense was in a position to win and just didn't do it multiple times over again.
I don't want to.
You're right. It's a setting up. It's chicken or the egg here. At the same time, when you have a pitching staff that is fully rested, well rested, more rested, you know, as a major league staff can be at the end of a year, that's kind of what we're looking at. If everything continues to go along this path, if everything goes along this path, you know, we're going to also get a Severino back. Who knows what, you know, what his impact will be. Who knows where he will be the contributor. If it's in the bullpen in the beginning, if it is immediately in the starting rotation, there are other guys coming as well. So it's looking good.
I don't want to step on Bob's segment, but all I'll say is just look at the previous World Series winners. They have not been constructed like the Yankees were constructing their pitching staff over the past few years. They had three or more starting pitchers that they relied on every night to go deep in ballgames.
It goes back to the Kansas City Royals. That's where this whole blueprint got drawn up.
But we debunked that because we looked at the numbers.
Because they had good starting pitching in the playoffs, but they also had a dominant back end.
Right, they did. I'm not saying you could have a trash bullpen and win a championship.
I mean, they had a dominant back end.
It's kind of funny.
It's
funny when you say it that way.
They did. Dominant.
How about Friday's game? One of the wackier baseball games I can remember watching. It started out as a strikeout fest. Overall, 48% of the outs came on strikeouts. 26 strikeouts and 54 total outs. And there was a triple play in there, so that skewed things a bit. The Yankees struck out 15 times as a team, 13 against Carlos Rodon in just six innings, and he struck out the first five hitters of the game that he faced. And the triple play happens, gets the Yankees out of a jam. Looks like the Yankees were going to lose that game. Chapman was going to possibly give up his first run in the ninth inning on that. Boom, triple play, which is triple play. Where do you rank that as far as exciting plays in baseball? Like, I feel like inside the park home run, triple play, those two, because they're so rare that
triple play, you don't see coming. It takes the same amount of time really as a double play. So there's not as much anticipation in it. There's not a buildup for a triple play. Like you're never thinking it before it happens.
No, you just joke happens. About it like a triple play would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. You're saying it in jest, or it's just, you're just talking shit, whatever. It's not like you actually think anything like that's going to happen. The ball has to be perfectly hit. And it was perfectly hit. It was hit perfectly to Urshela so that he made that turn. And then the turn at second, like you got to have some mustard on that ball too. And there was mustard on that ball. I mean, the fact that they turned it, beautiful stretch by Voit. It was gorgeous. It's exciting. When it happens, it's exciting as shit because when you're seeing it, you're not expecting it. Everybody is fired up. I mean, the cheese grin on Chapman after that thing happened, like probably the best, it looked like it was the best thing he's ever seen in his entire life. So yeah, inside the park home run is there, but just like exciting plays. I don't know, man. A guy first scoring from first base on a double late in a game is exciting as shit to me.
Okay, but that...
Because is he going to do it? Is he going to turn? Are they sending him? They're sending him. There's a play at the plate. Let me
say
this.
Plays at the plate are no longer a thing because you can't block the plate.
You could. It's still a thing because it's still exciting because it can still be
less
bang,
exciting
bang.
Now. It's
you can't
it's
mow a guy exciting. Over anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you can't pull a Pete Rose anymore, and that's what made it extra exciting. I'd say home run robberies, like really good home run robberies where the guy's like in the air, well over the fence, robs a home run. Maybe if it's late in the game and it preserves the lead inside the Parkers.
What about when the Yankees fan tries to block the robbed home run? Because that's what happened today.
Wait, what? What are you talking about?
It looked like Clint Frazier went up for the ball. It was at the eighth inning. It made it a 4-3 game, I think that home run did. And Yankee fan in the front row caught the ball. He was behind the fence, but like right there, Frazier was they showed the replay. The angle wasn't great, but he had a chance at it. It was either going to, you know, glance off the end of his glove or flop out of it, or he was going to catch it. It was close enough where it looked like he had a chance.
Full disclosure, the game was on the iPad, and what I was doing at that point in the game was we were trying to see if Harrison would go in the pool. He didn't.
Well, there you go. Clint Frazier got robbed of robbing a home run.
I thought you meant there was a ball Gio hit early in the game that went off the very top of the wall, and a fan almost reached over and grabbed it, pulled the Jeffrey Mayer, but the thing was a piss missile. It would have taken his freaking
fingers. No. This was a high fly ball. It was, you know, it's an out in many places, and it scraped just on top of the wall, and dude caught, he wasn't looking, he wasn't paying attention. He was trying to catch the ball, eye on the ball, no awareness of what's happening with the play, no awareness of where Frazier is. Yankee fan catches definitely impedes the catch. As a Yankee fan, and you're close to the wall and the other team's hitting, you gotta know that, first of all, right field especially, there's a monster playing right field. And if there's not, it's Clint Frazier this time, but still, those are catchable balls. Okay, you gotta let the guy play.
I almost feel like they do have these signs, do not interfere with the ball in play, but instead of those signs, they need to explain, like, know the situation.
Back the fuck up when the other team is hitting.
Exactly.
If it's possible that the right fielder can catch it, that's a good thing for your team, you dumbass.
Yeah.
How about
think
that?
About who's sign at that bat. Says that. Who's at bat? Okay. If the Yankees are at bat, this is what you do. It's like one of those flow charts. If the other team's batting, this is literally
you're supposed to react to the play, not think while the ball's in the air. Right?
Well,
you got to make sure you're mentally prepared for what's going to happen so that you don't have that extra time to think about it.
Well, the fans are less a part of the on-field action than ever because of the nets all around the foul territory. So you can't have
right field. There's no excuse there.
No, but you can't have a Bart, what's his name? Bartman?
Yeah.
That was his name.
No, you
right?
can't. Yeah, I think so. Bartman. Yeah.
That doesn't sound right. Cubs 2003.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, Bartman.
The turtleneck. Okay.
Can you Google that, Bob? Do you know where you were one? Do you know what we're talking about?
No.
It's Bartman.
Google Bartman 2003 Cubs and see what comes up. You're not going to like this next topic, Scott. DJ LeMahieu has not been looking like DJ LeMahieu. He has not been looking like an MVP caliber player, which is what the Yankees got in 2019 and 2020. So far, he's hitting .260 with a sub-700 OPS and a 101 WRC+. So he's basically been a league average offensive player. The Yankees offense has not been good overall. I'm not expecting some of these guys to like okay, if you're going into a game and you've got Tyler Wade in there and Brett Gardner and Kyle Higashioka and Mike Ford, like those guys aren't going to be hitting. DJ LeMahieu needs to start playing better. He needs to start hitting more. That's what they paid him to do. Start being DJ LeMahieu again. And we haven't seen it at the plate yet.
No, he's off to a slow start. But as Kemp says, sometimes that's okay. That's okay.
Everyone gets a trophy. That's the world Kemp's being raised in.
That's okay. No, he's always like, oh, that's okay, right, Dad? That's okay, right, Dad? I can do this. That's okay, right, Dad? Yeah. No, that's okay. That is okay because DJ has earned the slow start. And you know what? A DJ LeMahieu slow start is him hitting 265. Okay, fine. Sorry. Let me tell you what the guy has done. Let me tell you what this guy has done.
Great.
He has played second base. He has played first base. He has played third base. He has done everything
possible. He will play shortstop. Anything
you could ask for in the outfield. He should play shortstop. He could play shortstop. He is not hitting like we normally expect him to hit. It will come. Of all of the things that I expect to be fine in this world, it's DJ LeMahieu hitting the baseball. That's it.
Are you a little worried that the juice ball is sapping some of his power? Because a sub 700 OPS is not good. It's not good.
No, I'm not. I'm legitimately not at all worried about DJ LeMahieu.
You're not at all worried. 0% worried.
Like 0%. If we could go negative, I would go negative. Of all the people on this team to worry about, the last person I'm worrying about is DJ LeMahieu.
This is where I think people misunderstand. Like, I'm not going to concern myself if Brett Gardner is struggling or Tyler Wade is struggling. Or
he's not. He's hitting 382.
Brett Gardner, I know, since like his last 20 plate appearances. DJ LeMahieu needs to be one of the Yankees' best players. Okay, that's what he is on this team for right now. They re-signed him for 6 years.
He's a top five offensive player on this team right now.
But a sub 700 OPS is not what we expected out of him.
But when you're looking across
the league, can you at least acknowledge that?
I have already acknowledged that. I know he's off to a slow start. He's not exactly what we expected. Of course, this is true. But again, not worried. When you look across the league, when you see everybody and the offense, you were talking about this. Offense is down everywhere. DJ LeMahieu still hitting, you know, a respectable clip and grinding. Like, the guy's going to figure it out.
League average OPS is 709. He has a 694 OPS. He's below league average.
Yeah. Slow start. Slow start.
Bob, what'd you find?
Good thing he could play multiple positions too and save our ass in that way.
I mean, yeah, just like you guys said, 2003, the fan incident.
His name was Bartman, though, right?
Yeah, he was a fan.
It blows my mind that you don't know this story. So, I mean, I know this. I mean, Steve Bartman. It just came to my head.
Yeah, Bartman, I know.
2003, game six of the NLCS, the Cubs were leading. And there was a foul ball down the left field line. Moises Alou was going to go into the stands and make the play. And Steve Bartman reached up and then it clanked off Bartman's hands. Moises Alou freaked out. The bat extended. The Marlins ended up scoring like 9 runs in the inning. And then they blew him out the next night. And everyone blamed Steve Bartman. The guy got like death threats. Crazy.
Exiled. Just terrible. I feel terrible for the guy.
I've definitely seen this play. I didn't know. I had no idea his name was Steve Bartman.
There's a
turtleneck and the old school Walkman headphones.
I mean, he looks like a murderer in some of these pictures.
But people used to go to baseball games with headphones on and listen to the radio broadcast. Like,
they
that used
do.
To happen.
No, no,
they
still do.
Anymore. They don't do that.
Yes, anymore. They do. People do that.
Who does that? I have not seen that in a long time.
I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen. You definitely see that the people at Yankee Stadium will still do it. The same people are scoring it in their book.
The key is you have to get an AM radio to do it, so it's very close to being live. Because if you were doing it through, say, the MLB app, you're like a minute.
No, you
behind.
Do it through AM radio. AM radio still works. You know,
I just said the key
gotten
is
rid
you
of
do
the
it
radio airwaves.
I know AM radio still works. I listen to 660 John and Susan whenever I'm driving around in my automobile. But okay. If you tried to do it on your phone, it wouldn't work. Is what I'm saying.
No, you got
to
bring it. You got to bring a little AM.
You got to bring a Walkman. Walkman. We are freaking dating ourselves.
You got to bring a radio.
All right. So Hicks, he's going to have surgery, probably out for the season. Are you upset? Dude had an 80 WRC plus this year, betting 194. I'm not pouring one out for Aaron Hicks.
So I'm wondering how much of this wrist injury was affecting his performance as well. I mean, was he playing through this for, you know, extended period of time? Was this something that was lingering? You know, when you see the numbers that he put up as a left-handed bat, I mean, you could say that he had just a terrible start, but the guy was one of the worst batters in baseball.
Left wrist.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So
if anything, I feel like that would affect his right-handed hitting more because you lead with your left hand when you're hitting right.
Yeah, but when you're coming through, like your hand is on the butt of the bat. So there, it's taking impact as well. It's not comfortable. If you're right hand, right, think about when you're swinging. I'm backwards actually. Never mind.
Yeah, left hand. Okay, when he's hitting left handed, his right hand is leading. When he's hitting right hand, his left hand is leading. So a left wrist, I feel like, is more key to a right handed hitter than it is a left.
Okay, fine.
Hitter.
He was dog shit as a player in general. So I'm wondering if it was affecting him in some capacity.
I haven't heard that. Maybe. I don't know how long it was bothering him. I thought he injured it.
Either way, you have surgery now?
No, but I thought he injured it last week when they were, where were they?
I feel like one of the, if you injure the nutsack on your wrist, then it could be sprained early. How do you know if your nutsack is sprained on your wrist? I don't know. I don't know how that works, but I've never hurt that particular part of my body. It's an interesting one. The fact that he's going under the knife, he's not coming back this season. They're going to have to make a move. Brett Gardner is now the center fielder. Brett Gardner is the center fielder.
That's a problem.
And you know what? Here's the thing though with that. I don't know if we're getting to this, but I feel like we might be getting to this. I'm not sure. But you can live with his defense if you can get offensive production other places, because he can still play defense. The defense is not going to be an issue with Brett Gardner out there.
The reason I say Brett Gardner as your starting center fielder is an issue is because he's 38 years old and he's going to break down.
He is going to break down most likely.
Has nothing to do with him as the player at this point, because he's actually hitting .381 over his last 23 plate appearances. Not anything crazy.
Number two hitter.
But if Brett Gardner is playing 6 days a week in center field, he's not going to last.
No, you have to keep him on some kind of a rotation. And they really can't do that right now. They can't. They don't have the personnel to do it.
Tyler Wade is their only other center fielder right now.
There you go. Tyler Wade, here he comes.
Or they could trade for Delino DeShields.
Everybody wants to get rid of Tyler Wade. He's the backup shortstop, the backup right fielder, the backup center fielder. Flexibility. How many times have I talked about the guys that they keep on this team have flexibility in multiple areas? That's why Tyler Wade's valuable. He can run, steal bases, even though he gets caught on the base path way, way, way more than he should.
Question.
He's not doing that badly. He had a nice little infield hit today.
Does trading for Delino DeShields or someone like that make any sense?
I don't think so. So I saw the rumors about Delino DeShields. First of all, I think you're going to have to give up something for Delino DeShields.
Why? He's in AAA for Texas.
I guess so. You're going to have to give up a pitcher. I feel like you're giving up a low-A pitcher.
Player to be named later.
Maybe, but it's just not worth it. Like we have got Lamar.
Injured.
What's his face from Cleveland? Greg, who's hurt right now, but he's coming back. Fast center fielder in AAA. What the hell is his last name?
Well, I just don't think that Delino DeShields is going to do anything more than Tyler Wade in center field as a backup outfielder, because Brett Gardner is still going to be the starter.
He's not going to hit. We're going to get a little bit of defense, which is
so
good,
but
we have that.
I think that you get Floreal another 2 or 3 weeks of at-bats in AAA. And as long as he's not really, really struggling, like I listened to your podcast with Matt Cardos, and he talked about how Floreal's only hitting around 200, but he has pop. And I don't know if that continues, like that's fine. If he's going to play good defense and have a little bit of pop, bring him up. Right? I don't know Delino DeShields is going to change my mind on that. If you're saying they're going to actually acquire an outfielder, like a legitimate outfielder.
Delino DeShields is not the answer here.
No.
A guy like Delino DeShields, a AAA, a 4A player is not the answer here because they have those guys. They don't need a guy like that. They need to make a move that's going to make this team a better, more championship caliber roster. That's what they need. If they're going to do something, they need to do something thinking long-term. When I say long-term, I'm thinking in this season, something that's going to affect them and could help them in the playoffs. They don't need to make a Band-Aid move right now. This is not a Band-Aid situation. Greg Allen is who I'm thinking of. Greg Allen, looking at outfielders in AAA right now, a couple of names that are interesting. They just had some guys that got hurt. And the reason why the reason why the call up that they had was because of injuries. Greg Allen probably would have been the guy to come up, to be honest. He was, he was with Cleveland. He's a similar player, like really good speed, plays good defense. I think he can hit for average a little bit better, but again, 4A type player. Trey Ambergay, I totally screwed that up, is a guy that's been in the system for a long time as well.
Glad it wasn't
another
me.
Outfielder that we could, that a 4A guy that could come up, right? Another one, Zach.
These guys need to be added to the 40 man, right? None of these guys are on the 40 man.
No, but they have no, that's not an issue right now.
Ryan Lamar will be dumped.
Exactly. Lamar will be gone. The reason they probably brought him up is because it's an easy drop. Some of these other guys, Zach Zander is another guy who's had success at the AAA level. We've seen him have success in the minor leagues. I would be shocked if we don't see him at some point.
How about this? Is this too crazy? Just put Giancarlo Stanton in left field.
Yeah. I mean, he's
not going to, he can't stay healthy when he, but if he can't stay healthy DHing, then who cares? You're not going to keep him healthy. Just put him in left field.
They're not going to do it though.
But why? Like, seriously, he gets
load management. Exactly the reason. But you know the reason why.
It doesn't work for him even DHing. So screw it.
But the reason he's on the IL right now is part of this load management philosophy, I think. I don't think normally he would have been put on the shelf. But it's because of the 10-day IL now, because of they were, I mean, he's coming back in the next series.
He's probably going to be back Tuesday, yeah.
So he's not missing that much time. I mean, this was retroactive, so they were able to do it,
because
they were resting
days.
Him anyway. So it was just, it was a matter of what, 5 days.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Really, that at the end of the day, like it wasn't, because they had him.
He missed
2-3 days?
Well, he missed 2 full series.
Right? I know, but before they put him
he missed 3 series. He missed the Baltimore series, then the Texas series, then the Chicago series.
My point is before they actually put him on the IL, he had been sitting for a while,
the whole
weekend,
able
to retroactively.
Baltimore. Yeah.
Right. And because this team was in a situation they were in, they were able to do that. I think that was more of a situational convenience than anything. I think it's part of it. I just don't think they're going to put him out there. Nothing we've seen.
I don't think they are either.
They're going to put him in the field.
I don't think they are either. Other than that one comment from Aaron Boone in spring training, where it's like, don't rule out.
The reason why they have roster problems is because they have a log jam in that DH spot. That's why. If you have a DH that has to be there and can't play in the field at all, it prevents you from doing certain things. He's a DH.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit betterhelp.com/bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bronx21. One more time, betterhelp.com/bronx21. All right, let's get to Bob the intern. Bob the intern is what I think I was calling you. Bob the intern. Lead it with your segment.
Yeah, so we were sort of touching on it before, how this the makeup of this team with a solid pitching staff. We haven't really seen it much in the past few years. The pitching has always been kind of questionable, up in the air. So looking back at the 2018 team, would you prefer a 2018 type Yankees team, which was considered a top three offense with a mediocre pitching staff, or a 2021 Yankees team, which is so far considered a top three pitching staff and a pretty mediocre offense?
I mean, it's difficult to say what I would prefer at this point because we're only a month and a month, 2 months into this season, and we know what the other Yankees team looks like. And I was just done with what that Yankees team looks like. I was just tired of the same shit, different day with that team. So I far and away prefer what I've watched over the past 5 weeks, 4 weeks, than what I watched for 3 years with a bad starting pitching staff, a great bullpen, and a great offense.
It's a grass is greener situation, though, because if we're watching it reversed, you're going the other way, right? So when we're looking at the fact that, and you're right, this is a difficult question to answer because of that, I think. Because we've seen the offense just go, you know, bonkers in the past few years and then get shut down by good right-handed pitching in the playoffs. Again, that's my problem here. Because when we're talking about a gangbusters offense, is that one, are we talking about one that's like, you know, just mashing the ball and hitting home runs all the time and that's how they're scoring? Or are we talking about ones, an offense where you actually have a decent lineup construction, you have guys that can, you know, move runners around.
No, specifically you have guys that have the ability to go the other way. Specifically the Yankees offense of the past few years.
I will take the pitching all over the offense. If I'm trying to win a championship, I'll take the pitching over the offense all day, because I think, you know, if you have a dominant pitching staff, you could scratch across runs. If you have a shitty pitching staff, you're out of games. So I think the first situation when you have a good pitching staff, you're in more games. Therefore, you have more opportunity and more situations to scratch runs across and to take a lead or to win a game. So to me, that one gives you a better opportunity to win. I'm choosing one or the other.
I actually think the way the Yankees have been playing this year allows more margin for error than the way the Yankees were constructed and needed to win ball games in the past. Where the way they need to win ball games in the past is hit two or more home runs in the game, get 4+ innings out of your rotation, and then hope that your bullpen is locked down for 4 or 5 innings. That was just way too much to rely on every night. Too much
to go wrong.
This is exactly
why we said this. Look, when the Rays started doing this opener nonsense, I was like, okay, great. This is something that's impossible to sustain. Impossible to sustain. There's no, like, this is can be one of those fads where everybody tries to mimic it, but nobody's going to do it the same way. These guys had a situation with their roster where they were able to execute this. They had a very good pitching staff. There's some luck involved with this, but it's just not sustainable. You need too many people to be good on one given day multiple times. It just doesn't happen. The odds are against you, period, in baseball. The odds are always against you in baseball. So by trying to be smarter than the game, be smarter than the odds, be smarter than, you know, the law of averages, it's just not sustainable. It can work in small amounts of time, but it's going to bite you in the ass.
What do you think the average fan would prefer?
Offense.
Like, I feel like people might look at this Yankees team so far and maybe just baseball in general this year and think, oh, that sucks. Like, no one's hitting. Where are the guys hitting? Why aren't the Yankees hitting six home runs? Because when I went to the game in 2019, they hit six home runs every time I went. You know, and that's how it was across Major League Baseball. So I feel like the average fan would choose.
When you say average fan, it's, I mean, you're saying casual fan, one that doesn't follow every night, just checks box scores or checks highlights.
No, that's not even casual. Like, I feel like this whole casual fan thing, like,
what's your qualification of a casual fan then? Because I think that matters here.
I would say a casual fan is someone who goes to a handful of games a year, maybe watches half of the regular season games.
And they're going for entertainment value or going to
entertainment? Yeah, they're going to watch half the games, maybe not even the whole games, half of half. You know what I mean? They'll check into half of the time. They'll go to four or five games on a Saturday afternoon. And then they'll leave it in the eighth inning. And then they'll watch in the playoffs. And then when the playoffs come around, they're going to stick around all nine innings. That's the casual fan.
Sport. So, I mean, that, if you're doing that, though, I mean, that's enough to, like, you should be in tune with what's happening.
I can't just call you there
for entertainment. If you're going, so I think of a casual fan as someone who says they're a fan of a sport, doesn't really follow them on a day-to-day basis, watches for pure entertainment, and that's kind of it. They can name, you know, a majority of the people on the team, but they don't know much about them. They don't know situations. They don't know anything that's happened. They know the wins. They know the losses. They know where they are in the standings. They will go to games for entertainment value or because it's social, and then they will have a shit ton of Yankees gear because they think it's cool.
They'll have far more Yankees gear than I own.
Yeah,
I don't know, Bob. What do you prefer?
Yeah, what's your definition of a casual fan?
I mean, I would say for a long time I was a pretty somewhat casual fan. Like I would tune into what's happening, but I mean, growing up I stopped playing baseball and like watching as much, but I'd say I'd consider a casual fan someone that sort of knows what's going on enough that they could talk about like stats and players and stuff like that.
That's
like
more than a casual fan. Yeah. I feel like if you can talk specifics, you're more than a casual fan.
If you could talk specifics, that's why I said standings and like if they're winning or losing or. And you're definitely going to a game for more of a social thing or so you can post it on your Instagram story or, you know, you're just
going for
like
the chicken
that.
Bucket.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Well, no, because that if you know the food at Yankee Stadium, now we might be talking as a different level of fan. No,
my wife, Leanne, knows about the chicken bucket and she, so.
Okay. So about the food.
Hold on. I got to tell you the story. So during Corey Kluber's no hitter, it's like the eighth inning or something. And Leanne comes in the room like, oh, the Yankees are pitching a no hitter tonight. And she's like, what does that mean? I was like, that means the other team doesn't have any hits. And she was like, so the Yankees pitcher has only thrown strikes? I'm like, no, that means he hasn't given up a hit. She's like, but he's probably thrown a lot of strikes, right? I'm like, well, yeah. And I was like, she got it down to the dumbest possible level that I almost started to second guess myself. I was like, is she right? Like, was she technically right about what she said? And I was like, how is it possible?
Abnormally high amount of strikes.
I was like, how is it possible that you've known me for 6 years? You've consumed so much secondhand baseball, yet know so little. It's like she has, if you like, you equate it to like secondhand smoking. She's secondhand chain smoking baseball at this point, and she still knows nothing about the sport.
Baseball is the type of sport, if you're not paying attention to it, if it's just on, you have no idea what's happening. If you don't know what's happening, it's like another language.
But I know more about The Bachelor than she knows about baseball.
I was just going to compare that. I was just going to make this comparison.
And I don't watch The Bachelor. Let me be clear.
Okay. I'll go next. So Bevan's the first date that Bevan and I ever went on, the first date, we knew each other through like rec sports stuff, like kickball, volleyball, you know, like things you play after college and you're just trying to be social. I knew her through that. So I knew she was athletic. Our first date was like a joke thing. We went and we hit ground balls to each other. Like that was it.
You've told me this story and it's funny every time. You imagine that, Bob? You take a date. What are you going to do? Bring your gear.
That's why it wasn't really a date. It was just like, hey, no, I was like, oh, let's just go meet at the field.
We met fungos. At the field.
She played softball in college. So we went and she laid out for a ball up the middle.
There's love, fielded it cleanly. Love right there.
I was like, as soon as she dove for that ball. God. Yeah, what? this is ridiculous.
And that's the moment you know.
That was literally the moment I knew. I was like, this has, now we're done here.
But does Bevan have
me.
More?
She duped me. She duped me. She's athletic. She played sports. She's good at softball. Doesn't know. She knows the game. She knows the game. Doesn't watch a goddamn second of it. Yeah. Doesn't watch a second of it. I was like, wait a minute. So we're not watching it. You're not going to watch any of this. You're not going to pay attention to any of this or like be able to. She knows the name. She knows who the people are. She knows the game. She knows the sport. Like she could talk about it.
See, that's important. Knowing if you know the game, if you've played softball, if you played
baseball. But I want her to be a Yankee fan. I want her to be a Yankee fan so that we can like just go and
but
do
if
that.
You said
it would be much easier for like my household to have you know, a kid grow up in it that's like watching the Yankees all the time, even though I'm gonna chain him down to the couch and he will watch the Yankee games. But it would be easier.
But if you said to Bevan, the Yankees are pitching a no-hitter, she wouldn't come back with, so they've thrown a lot of strikes.
No, she knows what that is.
Okay, so that's my point. That's my point. Bevan,
she pitched
Urshela at the hot corner on Scott's first date, just hitting, ripping fungos down the third baseline. Hope it doesn't take a bad hop.
Full extension layout. I was like, oh my God. This is like an 11-inch glove too. Oh my God.
All right, let's run through a couple of mailbag questions.
If that's not love, I don't know what is, right? Like, that's it. That's the
stuff. You know what to do.
That's the stuff that we
love at first sight.
So,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, that's what you want.
When you take girls on dates now, you bring a bat, you bring a ball, you hand them a glove and say, let's see what you got. Yeah, yeah. And then that's what
just
you
start
do.
Drilling some balls at them.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
First mailbag question. It's from Nick. Early deadline talk. Let's pretend they decide to ignore the luxury tax for a World Series. Am I crazy for thinking trading for Trevor Story and sending Glaber to DC in a package for Scherzer is a plausible thing? Washington has had a wide open spot at second, and I'm guessing they'd love a 24-year-old that's shown MVP talent in the majors as a centerpiece. Add a low-cost left-handed outfield bat, and we can plan the parade. Nick asks, if it is plausible. No, that is not plausible. The Yankees are not trading Gleyber Torres, and I don't even want to entertain the fact because it's just not happening.
I mean, this has been something that's come up already. The Trevor Story, Gleyber Torres thing, like it's not, we've already debunked this. It's not happening. It's not a good idea. Can Trevor Story play center field? Can he play, you know, hey, Clint Frazier's starting to swing the bat a little bit better too. This is what he needs. He understands that he's got to play. He's got to play well because they will make a move. And I'm hoping that this is a long time in, but he's got to start playing better. Trevor Story doesn't play the positions that they need to fill to make this team better. Just doesn't, it's not a fit.
Also, Gleyber Torres for Max Scherzer is a giant overpayment. Max Scherzer is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. It's just you don't give up that kind of player for a rental pitcher, no matter how good he is, as good as Max Scherzer.
Plus right, you're paid. There's so many things wrong with this.
Well, he said to ignore the luxury tax, so I didn't bring it up.
But you can't.
This next one from Jake Steele is interesting. Jake Steele. Anyway.
That's his real name.
Hey guys, big fan of the show. If Severino comes back healthy and the Yankees promote Garcia or trade for a starter, Reed Scherzer. So this guy wants Scherzer too. Could you see Tyon?
Everybody wants Scherzer. Of course we want Scherzer. Everybody wants Scherzer. Yes. Scherzer would be great. Scherzer would make this team dominant. There's no doubt about it.
Does
no
Bevan
doubt.
Know that Max Scherzer is a good pitcher?
He does. She does. And she also knows that his eyes are crazy. He's got one blue and
right,
one brown
because,
or whatever.
Because her mother, so your mother-in-law is a Nats fan.
My right? mother-in-law is a big Nats fan, yeah. So, they grew up in Northern Virginia. She grew up in Northern Virginia.
So Jake says, could Tyon become an effective reliever? I saw this stat the other day. Highest four-seam fastball whiff rate for starters. Jacob deGrom, 36%. Lance Lynn, 36%. Max Scherzer, 34%. Brandon Woodruff, 32%. Jameson Tyon, 32%. So Jameson Tyon is getting whiffs on his fastball, which we kind of knew with the eye tests and the expected stats that we went through. He's getting the swings and misses. He's got the stuff. He's getting the strikeouts, but he's also getting hit hard. So
I didn't know he was top five. I can tell you that I did not know he was top five.
No. That's why this stat, like I'm glad Jake
sent
this.
It's a good stat.
So that could translate to a bullpen. If Tyon is still up and down in the rotation, inconsistent, Severino's coming back to be a starter. Someone's got to come out of the rotation. Everyone else is pitching well. That tells me, Tyon's stuff could translate to the bullpen.
It could. You're right. It could, especially, I mean, if you're getting that whiff rate on a fastball, a four seam fastball, one, that means you're able to show other things where it just becomes that much more effective, or you're controlling the at bat with that four seam fastball as well. It's good stuff. I mean, you look at those names on that list and those are impressive names. Those are impressive names right there.
DeGrom, Hot Dog Lynn, Max Scherzer, like those three names right there. Those have been some of the best pitchers in baseball for 3 years.
So yeah, theoretically, yes, that to me says, you know, a one inning guy, depending on what he can do. But I probably wouldn't mess with him with two innings out of the pen. He could be a one inning guy. He's like a Phil Hughes, man. It's like, look at what Phil Hughes.
People forget Phil Hughes 2009 was a big piece of that bullpen.
He was nasty. He was nasty. There was a lot of toying around with those guys that came up at that time. But Tyone, if this is the case, if Severino, I would not surprise me if Severino was in the bullpen either, to be honest.
Also, probably a guy that gets high swing and miss on his fastball. I don't know if he'd be top five, but all right. Last question. This one's from Dom, not our former intern and current colleague, Dom, but he says, will you be bringing back BP crew events this season? Scott, this is not something we've talked about on the podcast. Obviously, we've talked about it behind the scenes, but figured we could give an update for where we think things are going to happen this season. We did have 5 dates on the calendar for this year, even though COVID, we knew it probably was going to be unlikely. We were going to have that May game against Houston, which was going to be awesome. I think we had a Red Sox game on the calendar.
We had the Red Sox game is still coming. But so the long and short answer is hopefully, you know, we're planning for it, but the planning is
hard to plan.
It's hard to plan right now. It's hard to plan because we don't know what's going to happen yet. So I got my guy on speed dial. He's calling me when things are opened up and we'll make adjustments at that point. But yeah, we have reserved seats for some good games, the Red Sox game in July. So you could circle that game. I think it's already flexed that Saturday game to a night. I think it's a night 7 o'clock game, which is great.
Surprise. Yeah. I'm there at 1 o'clock. It makes sense. They flexed it because both teams are good. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, you look at I had it on the calendar thinking that we may not even do it because the Red Sox, it's still a premium game in July and they're not going to be good. That's what we thought. Right. But now that they're good, I'm like, okay, it makes it much more interesting.
Well, we're going to see the Red Sox finally at the end of this next stretch here of games. The Yankees have, you know, they have a day off Monday, but they still have a gauntlet of a schedule coming up and the Red Sox are in there.
Yeah. So again, not to be vague here, but it's kind of
you can be vague though, because
we're waiting for things to open up. If things open up, then tickets are reserved. I can tell you that.
Yeah. It's just, it's really hard to pick a date in the future when you don't know if that date's actually going to happen and then start selling tickets. It's just, that opens up a whole can of worms.
Well, the dates are going to happen. It's a matter of, we don't know what the capacity is going to be.
Right, and that's what I mean.
Or what the rules are, because right now you can't even do groups in the way that we can't do groups.
And like, they have social distance seating out in the stands. You can't do an event in right field. So yeah,
they have vaccinated areas, non-vaccinated areas.
It's
you got to make sure that if you're with if you had a group, then like, there's just too many things to happen for it to, it's a logistic nightmare. So, I miss them.
I appreciate the question, Dom.
We're trying. Yeah, we're trying. We're trying to get them. We're not trying. They're ready to go. As soon as the Yankee Stadium tells us that it's okay, then yes, they're coming back. So that's the true answer.
Cool. All right. That's going to wrap it up for today. We do have voicemails, so stay tuned for those. I know we didn't do them on last week's episode. You guys got to call the voicemail line and light it up and get on this. 646-480-0342. The team's playing better. Show your love. We had a no hitter, a triple play. I don't know how much more eventful a week could be than those two things. We will talk to you guys in a few days.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Long-time listener, first-time caller, second, third, all right, fifth or sixth-time caller, but making this call Wednesday night, just saying that this is the Yankees team we want to see, and if the Yankees tonight sh- show like they are and can sweep Tampa to drop, then we're really talking about a serious team here. We can all agree that we're moving past what we saw in April, early May. We can see a team that we can fully get behind winning the pennant. Go Yanks.
Yeah, just looking at the lineup before tonight in Game 1, and I realize we're beyond the point where we know Higgy is Cole's personal catcher, but I would like to see Sanchez in for the next four games, solely if not just to raise his trade stock at the deadline. But in the past seven games, he's batting .240. I believe he has three home runs. He's got six hits and four RBIs. And Higgy's only batting .91. He's only got two hits with one home run and two RBIs. So I would like to give Sanchez one final shot, and then we can see what to do with him. Hopefully trade him for a piece of the deadline that can help us win the World Series. All right. Bye.
What's up, Pinstripers? This is Eric from Syracuse. Now, the timestamp of this is 9:26 p.m. Wednesday night, the Gerrit Cole game. So I don't know yet if they won or lost, but if Tyler Wade isn't off this team by midnight, then the collection of pictures that he must have of various Yankee executives must be astounding. That's all I got to say. Fuck Tyler Wade. I don't remember which one of you defends this asshole, but whichever one of you, you're an asshole too. Bye.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.